Guys, we are in Obadiah. Now, how many of y'all are proficient in Obadiah? And I just need to go ahead and skip this, right? Just raise your hand. Yeah. You know, we've got all of these minor prophets that I have not heard a sermon on. Of course, next week, we're going to have Jonah. And you guys all know Jonah the big fish, you know, that kind of stuff. It's only four chapters. We may do all four of them. As a matter of fact, we probably will do all four of them in one week. But today we're in Obadiah. And who can tell me a little bit about Obadiah?
Corresponds to Joel, according to my notes. Let's see. Given the concerning Edom.
Yeah, who's he talking to? Is he talking to Jerusalem? Is he talking to the northern tribes? I mean, we always get him talking to somebody. So, you know, he's trying to get something across to somebody. And in this particular case, he's got 21 verses, one chapter. And it seems to me that he had a vision from the Lord and he had a vision about Edom. Now, if you look at Jeremiah 14, almost word for word. It's really kind of, so somebody had somebody sitting in front of him, and I think probably Jeremiah had Obadiah. And you remember that time he said, and against Edom and against the Philistines and against this, you know, it was everybody in the nations. He was pulling out one at a time. He had like little cliff notes of Obadiah, I think, and he basically, you know, he brings up the fact that, you know, there won't be gleanings from the grapes left. Well, it's the same. Jeremiah said the exact same thing. So when you do the parallel on the two of them, it's really kind of interesting.
So he's talking to Israel.
He's talking to Edom.
Edom.
Now let's talk about who Edom is, and who is Edom, and where are they?
Oh, I got maps. Hold on.
I bet one of these is good.
Before I can tell you where we are.
Yeah, we're right here. Well, there's Edom. Man, I like this one better. All right. So where is Edom on the map? Where's Jerusalem on the map? Right, just trying to figure out where we are. Here's Jerusalem right here. Okay? So you kind of get your bearings. Northern tribe is Samaria up here. Galilee's up in this area. So first, let's talk about who Edom is. Who is Edom? Who are the people of Edom? Oh, I know you're just Esau folks, right? Mm-hmm. So you had Jacob and Esau, right? Mm-hmm. So you had Jacob and Esau. Jacob and Esau. And Esau was the first one to come out, right? And Jacob, you know, sold him porridge and all that. Y'all remember this whole story? So he was able to take his birthright. Mm-hmm. So after that, they didn't have very good family reunions. Never got along real well after that. And so when they're coming back out of Egypt, when the Israelites are coming back out of Egypt, they said, hey, you might as well cross over the back 40. And no, not my back 40. You're not going to. You're going to have to go all the way around. So they forced them to go out of their way to go to the promised land. Couldn't go through Esau's property. So they always had this enmity against each other. Well, in what we're going to be talking about today is Esau is watching something bad happen to Israel, and they're kind of rejoicing about it. They're happy about it. You ever had that? There are a lot of people that, let's say business and the world view, and they might be a multimillionaire, and all of a sudden something bad happens to them. Like, well, you know, I could see that one coming. They were about due for that. And you kind of rejoice a little bit in the fact that somebody may have been taken down a peg or two, you know, gotten a little above their raising. There's a southern. Granny always told me, don't get above your raising, boy. So, in today's terms, you've got Jerusalem right here, and this part is where Edom is, this area right here. But there's a section. Do you remember, if you ever watched like National Geographic, you've seen the thing called the city called Petra, mm-hmm. where they've got it built into the cliffs. They've got, you know, beautiful. That's what we're talking about. So they've got a fortress. Esau has, and his money, has got a fortress there. Well, let's go ahead and read a little bit of this, so this will make sense. I'm talking all the way around it. But anyway, Obadiah is talking to Esau's people at a time when Israel is going through calamity. The vision of Obadiah, thus says the Lord God concerning Edom. So he's talking to Edom.
"We have heard a report from the Lord, and an envoy has been sent among the nations, saying, 'Arise and let us go against her for battle. Behold, I will make you small among the nations. You are greatly despised. The arrogance of your heart has deceived you. You who live in the clefts of the rock, in the loftiness of your dwelling places, who say in your heart, "Who will bring me down to earth?" Now, I want you to notice what he's doing here. He's setting them up to say, you're prosperous. You've got great trade routes. You've got all this security around you. And if you look at Petra, it's a place where you have to come through this ravine, basically. And so they can protect themselves very well. They can be up in the high cliffs of the rock, so they've got all this protection. And they rely on that protection for protection. They're not looking to God to protect them. They're like, we've got military might. We've got trade routes. We've got all these things going for us. So they're not really looking to God to say... that they need God to take care of them. Verse 4. "Though you build high like an eagle, though you set your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord. If thieves came to you, if robbers by night, how much will you be ruined? Oh, how you will be ruined. Would they not steal only until they had enough? If grape gatherers came to you, would they not leave some gleaning?" This is a really great word picture. He's saying, you know, the robbers come in. When they leave something behind, no, they're not going to leave anything. And then when you're gathering grapes, there's always something left for the poor. There's gleanings that are left. He's like, they're not going to leave nothing. When they come through, there's going to be nothing left from your place. Verse 7, "All the men allied with you will send you forth from the border, and the men at peace with you will deceive you and overpower you. They who eat your bread will set an ambush for you. There is no understanding in him." So they're really relying on their security, their military security, their alliances with other nations. Hey, we're good guys. We get along with everybody. Well, their alliances with the other nations are going to bring them down also. Questions or comments before I go on? This is not a hard one to really understand. Verse 8, "Will I not on that day, declares the Lord, destroy wise men from Edom?" They had a lot of wise men in Edom, and they relied on that wisdom and that from the people that were guiding them. "And understanding from the mountain of Esau, then your mighty men will be dismayed, O Teman, in order that everyone may be cut off from the mountain of Esau by slaughter. Because of violence to your brother Jacob, you will be covered with shame, and you will be cut off forever." So what has brought all this on? Their violence against their brother. Their violence against their fellow man. But really, their close brother. Their cousin.
I see God's sovereignty in this a lot. As I read down through here, over and over, you'll see the word, well, the three words, "in that day."
Mm-hmm.
So that tells you right there pretty much that this is not an if, that this is God's sovereignty. This was planned way back when Rebecca had them both in the womb, when they, you know, God told her, "You got two nations within your womb, and they're going to fight, you know, they're going to be at war till the time of, all the way to the time of Christ." So,
it's really kind of interesting. In the Hebrew, "in that day" is said 10 times in these verses, and in the English, it's said 8 times. Yeah. So, yeah, it's very emphatic.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Verse 11. "On the day you have..." Well, let's go to 10. "Because of violence to your brother Jacob, you will be covered with shame, and you will be cut off forever. On the day that you stood aloft, on the day that strangers carried off his wealth and foreigners entered his gate and cast lots for Jerusalem, you too were as one of them." So has the fall of Israel happened at this point? He's saying yes. God's saying that you were there. Remember where they are. They're in the southern kingdom just below Jerusalem. So when they saw the Babylonians come in, they saw what was going on, and they go in and help. They go in and help the Babylonians overthrow the Israelites. And not only that, you'll see here someplace, they stood at the crossroads. When somebody would try to run away and flee from the Babylonians, they would catch them and go, oh, this one's trying to get away, and he'd take them back to the Babylonians and turn them in. So they weren't just impassive viewers, they were people who were actively trying to bring down Jerusalem. On that day, you stood aloof, and on that day, the strangers carried off his wealth, and foreigners entered his gate and cast lots for Jerusalem. You too were as one of them. Do not gloat over your brother's day, the day of his misfortune, and do not rejoice over the sons of Judah in the day of their destruction. Yes, do not boast in the day of their distress. Do not enter the gate of my people in the day of their distress. Yes, you do not gloat over their calamity in the day of their disaster, and do not loot their wealth in the day of their disaster, and do not stand at the fork of the road to cut down their fugitives, and do not imprison their survivors in the day of their distress. For the day of the Lord draws near on all nations. As you have done, it will be done to you. Your dealings will return on your own head. Because just as you drank on my holy mountain, all the nations will drink continually, and they will drink and swallow, and become as if they had never existed. But on Mount Zion there will be those who escape, and it will be holy, and the house of Jacob will possess their possession. So God is saying, they're down right now. You've watched them go down. You've helped them come down. They're coming back. Oh, by the way, you're not. I mean, that's basically what he's saying to it. You're going to be erased from the face of the earth, which they have been. I mean, who now says, let's all go to Edom. Let's take a vacation and go to Edom. Well, Edom doesn't exist anymore. Petra still does. I wouldn't mind going to see Petra. I think that would be pretty cool.
Have you been to Petra?
Yeah, have you been to Petra?
No.
Well, that's a trip for us right there.
Go to Mesa Verde.
Huh?
Just go to Mesa Verde in Colorado.
Well, they're the same thing. I'd do that. I'm up for any trip.
It's a little trip.
It's pretty well preserved, too. I mean, parts of it.
Yeah.
Petra has.
What I'm worried is if Islamic State comes in, they blow up everything they see.
Isn't it on the Jordan side?
It is. Yeah. It's in Jordan. But you know, they just keep blowing everything up. I'm thinking, gee whiz, you better see it before they blow it up, and all you've got is a picture. Verse 17, but on Mount Zion there will be those who escape, and it will be holy, and the house of Jacob will possess their possession, and the house of Jacob will be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, but the house of Esau will be a stubble. And they will set them on fire and consume them, so that there will be no survivor in the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken. Then those of the Negev will possess the mountain of Esau, and those of the Shephelah and the Palestine plain, also they will possess the territory of Ephraim and the territory of Samaria. And Benjamin will possess Gilead, and the exiles of this host of the sons of Israel, who are among the Canaanites as far as Zarephath, and the exiles of Jerusalem who are in Shepharad, will possess the cities of the Negev. The deliverers will ascend Mount Zion and judge the mountain of Esau, and the kingdom will be the Lord's.
Ouch.
Hmm?
Ouch.
Ouch. Yeah, God's saying, one of the things that I read a lot was that, you know, God is long-suffering, and a lot of times we'll think, well, look, he's going to take down Israel, and he does, and he's not doing anything to Esau, and Esau's been fighting against them, so God must be on their side. And God is just long-suffering, and he's full of mercy and grace and gives many, many chances. So don't be deceived by thinking, well, he hasn't gotten it. I've done all these bad things so far, and he never has done anything to me. Well, God's not to be played with. He's keeping an account, and he's watching over what you do. He's just long-suffering and full of mercy, and doesn't always come down immediately, but eventually it builds to a point where this comes about.
Verse 21 is interesting.
The deliverers will ascend Mount Zion.
For its saviors shall come upon Mount Zion to judge the mount of Esau, and the kingdom shall be the Lord's. So this is like that's looking forward to another time, doesn't it?
Possibly.
Possibly.
because as I was reading, I couldn't help but go to Revelation 20, verse 6. Blessed and holy is he that has part in the first resurrection. So on the second has no resurrection. There's no death, no power shall be. But they shall be priests and kings of God and Christ and shall reign with him 1,000 years. So we got priests and kings mentioned here that's going to reign with Christ and to a point of judging. So I just couldn't help. I know it said saviors, plural, industry nurse.
It is. Anyone else? Yeah, that's all I got. And I didn't want to get us all confused and start in Jonah, so.
This commentary that I was reading was talking about the fact that Herod was king when Jesus was born, and he was from this family.
Really?
Yeah. But he is, after he died, that was the end of the whole group.
Huh.
Period.
Yeah, and that's new for me.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I was just reading that.
Convert that you gave him.
He was a descendant of Eliphaz, the friend of Job. His name means servant of God.
Romans 9:11. Can't ever think of it. Jacob I loved, Esau I hated. Before either was in the womb, before either one done any good or evil, I chose Jacob.
Well, thank you.